Last week at Podcast Movement, I was fortunate enough to meet the creator of a new podcast called Deliberations. I absolutely love it because it addresses the legal issues that my podcasts also address, but from a completely different angle. When we hear about wrongful convictions or unfair trials, we have this nagging question of what happened in the jury room in our minds. That's the question that Deliberations helps us to answer because it takes us into a mock jury room. It starts with the controversial, fictitious murder trial that's played for a mock jury. Then we hear those jury members react, debate, and argue their opposing opinions on the evidence. Season 1 explores the way a defendant's alternative sexual lifestyle brings out bias and influences the opinion of the defendant's moral character. This podcast puts you directly inside a deliberation room, and it helps us to gain better understanding of the process by which guilt and innocence are decided. Visit iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, or your favorite podcast app and search for Deliberations. Again, that's Deliberations. What do you think? Is our jury system flawed?
Hi, my name is Cedric Courtney, and I spent 15 years in prison for a crime I did not commit.
I'm DeMarco, and we're hanging with Brooke, and you're listening to Actual Innocence,
a podcast dedicated to spreading awareness of wrongful conviction and cracks in the justice system.
This week, we're talking with Cedric Courtney, and Cedric Courtney is a dear friend of mine, and so it's an honor to introduce him.
And this episode is being brought to you by ProFlowers, SeatGeek, and BarkBox, and a new podcast, Deliberations. I just wanted to remind you that without sponsors, many independent podcasts would not be sustainable. If you can't financially support our sponsors, please give them a shout out on social media and thank them for their support of the show.
I would like to speak about ProFlowers. The first time that I used ProFlowers, I surprised my wife when she got off of work, and the results were amazing.
ProFlowers wants to help you surprise someone for any reason or no reason, while also surprising you with a special deal for our listeners. Get 20% off of any of their unique summer rose bouquets or any other bouquet of $29 or more.
And if you're not sure which flowers to go pick, I'd go with the colorful rainbow roses. They're beautiful. And my wife really likes them. She loves them.
ProFlower bouquets are guaranteed to stay fresh for at least 7 days or your money back, and you control the delivery date.
ProFlowers gives you more bloom for your buck, big, beautiful flowers with more stems for your money.
To get 20% off summer roses or any other bouquet of $29 or more, go to ProFlowers.com and use our code AI at checkout. That's ProFlowers.com, code AI.
Don't wait to make someone's day. Move quick. I met Cedric Courtney in 1995. We were both in the county jail fighting for our freedom, and that's how we became friends. Cedric Courtney is a very good guy, and, you know, we worked out together. And the reason I wanted him on the show is because we come from a, you know, very poverty-stricken neighborhood. So for us to come from where we come from, to be where we were at for all those years, decades, and for us to be here now, you know, it's a pleasure to have him on the show.
I was had recently lost my job, and I was seeking employment. I went to filed for unemployment, and I received about 2 checks. And that's, I say that because the day that this happened was April 6th. That's my mother's birthday. My mother passed in 88. So that day, I borrowed my sister's car, and I went to my mother's grave site, and then I went to the unemployment office to file for unemployment. Again, I received 2 checks from them, but when it came time for my jury trial, they had they couldn't find any information from the unemployment.
So did you have a family? Were you living on your own? What was going on? What was your life like?
I had a girlfriend. Me and my girlfriend lived in apartments not far from the victim. It was just her and I living together out there.
How old were you?
I was 23.
So what can you tell me about the crime that you were accused of?
Well, the victim's name is Shamita Greer, and I was friends with her boyfriend, and she was friends with my fiance. And she was the type of person, she was an insurance fraud person. That's how she lived off insurance fraud. Like, she would get a job and fall. She would have somebody hit her from behind. So that's how she lived. So she was only robbed for $385, which is her exact rent for that month. And if you've read anything about my case, you know, a bunch of stuff was taken out of the apartment, but it wasn't just thrown outside. It wasn't actually taken. Only thing was taken was $385.
So wait, the $385 was stolen, but other stuff was just thrown outside?
Yes. Yes, they took some tires. They put tires and rims, TV, VCR, and they didn't take it anywhere. Just threw it outside, basically. That's all she was missing was her rent.
What made the police consider you a suspect?
She said it was me. She said it was me. Yeah. First and last name. She said,
And was it that same day, or like how long after she was, you can't see my air quotes, but how long after she was robbed did they come for you?
It was about 2 months, April, May, June. Yes, it was before my first daughter's birthday. So I went to jail, Tulsa County Jail, in June of 95. And the crime happened April 6th of 95.
And what was your interaction with the police like?
They came to me and my girlfriend's apartment, knocked on the door. She answered the door. They handcuffed her. I was upstairs. They came upstairs and handcuffed me and said I was going to jail for a robbery.
And what was, so they take you to the station, right? And
yes.
What was the interrogation like?
I truly don't remember, but they didn't want really to talk to me because I told them that, I was innocent and I don't care what they say or who you get. I'm not going to tell my story because I didn't do it. So they didn't really interrogate me too much because I told them, I didn't do it. I'm going to jury. I told them I was going to jury from the beginning because I didn't do it.
Right.
So they really didn't. They didn't really interrogate me. I guess they didn't want to waste their time.
And did they try to do like a polygraph or anything?
No, I didn't take a lie detector test.
So at any time, did you ask for an attorney then, since you knew you didn't do it? Did you ask for?
Yeah. My family got money together and, we got he was actually a family lawyer,
mm-hmm.
family divorce or whatever. And he did not know anything about criminal law, but he was the only person we could afford. So it was actually my aunt's attorney, and she said, "Well, the only lawyer I know is this one, and call him and see if he'll take the case." And he took the case.
And so, what were the charges?
Burglary in the first degree and robbery with a firearm.
And so you go to trial with a person who does family law. How long was your trial?
Not long. 3-4 days, maybe. I can't remember. It wasn't long. And the jury didn't take long to deliberate, maybe a day.
Wow. So how do you think your attorney did? What was his defense of you?
He did piss poor. It was a guy that and I don't know if this has anything to do with it or not, but there was a white guy that he was also an attorney for, and this guy was in jail for cultivating marijuana, running from the army helicopters on his land, on his four-wheeler. The helicopter chased him, crashed, and I think one person died on the helicopter. And the same guy was just defending this guy. And when they found out that we had the same attorney, they moved him. And when it was said and done, he got 5 years fed, and I got 60 years state.
Oh, my gosh. So was the witness the only evidence? Like, did they have any other kind of evidence that they were trying to present against you?
That was it. That's why it was so crazy. They knew that they had took my fingerprints. They came back negative because she got wrapped with duct tape, and so it was fingerprints on the duct tape. So she told them that. I can't even remember what story she started with, but she told like five different stories, and the DA kept telling them that no, that's not good enough. That's no, come up with something else on how she knew it was me. And first she said she recognized my height, recognized me by my height and weight, and the clothes I was wearing. The DA said no, that's not good enough. So she said she recognized my hands. So the fingerprints were a big deal. She said she recognized me by my hands. Yeah, by my hands. Like, I got 10 fingers. And there's not a short one. No, they all regular.
Right.
And the DA told him, no, that's not good enough. This went on for like 3 or 4 days before they could file the actual charges. So when it was all said and done, she came up with that she knew it was me because she even tried to say because of my voice. She recognized my voice. That didn't work. So she finally came up with, and the DA went along with, I got hot and I raised my mask, and she seen part of my face. So that's how she knew it was me. I mean, I'm like, really?
And that was the only evidence was her testimony.
And this red, supposedly red hair, that's my air quotes. You can't see them.
Do you have red hair?
No, it was dyed. That or bleached red hair. So I was bald. I've been bald.
Oh my gosh.
Yes, just my hair was, didn't want to cooperate. Early 20s.
So you had this one red hair that got,
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And they made a big deal out of it. And that's how they convicted me on. They even did a DNA test on that hair. And it came back, I think they said inconclusive. Me saying no, I'd say it's no, it came back, not me, not inconclusive, it's not me. And they still sentenced me because I didn't want to take no time. They didn't try to, it was two guys, they didn't try to find if it was me and who I was with. They never looked for a second person. They just stuck with me and they wanted me off the streets, I guess. I don't know. I wasn't a bad guy. I mean, I worked. So I don't know why they...
Hey, DeMarco, do you have a dog?
I sure do, Brody and Abby. Brody's a pit bull and Abby's a mini Yorkie.
I don't have a dog, but my mom does. And my brother and I used to fight over who was my mom's favorite, but now we both agree, it's the dog. So I decided to get my mom and her dog, BarkBox.
What's BarkBox?
Well, every month, BarkBox picks the best all-natural treats and innovative toys for your dogs. It even takes into account allergies and heavy chewers. It's a great way to try a variety of treats and toys from local and small businesses that you may not otherwise be able to find. Plus, there's free shipping on any BarkBox within the U.S.
Wow, that's great. How do I get BarkBox for my dogs?
Oh, it's super easy. You just tell them how big the dog is. You choose a plan, 1, 6, or 12 months, and you can cancel at any time, plus the free shipping, and they ship out on the 15th of every month.
Abby, do you want BarkBox?
That sounds like a yes to me. For a free extra month of BarkBox, visit BarkBox.com/actual when you subscribe to a 6 or 12 month plan. Well, so let me make sure I have this clear in my head. This woman who lives off of workman's comp had her exact rent amount stolen. Some of her possessions were thrown outside, but not stolen.
Correct.
And the evidence was a red hair that was dyed, but you, in fact, were bald.
Correct.
Okay. Just making sure I understand
correctly. They said a hair came out of my beard.
Do you remember the time the jury came back with a guilty verdict?
Yeah, remember, you were standing across the hallway.
What was that like for you?
Man, that was terrible. That was terrible. I was 23. I was a kid, man. That was terrible. It was devastating. But it didn't break, you know. I went and did it and came home.
What was your outlook once they found you guilty?
I was good with God knew that it wasn't me. And one day, you know, the truth will come out.
Did you think you would have to do the 60 years?
Yeah. Yeah. I was all the way up until I was on the highway home. I didn't think I was ever going home, Marco.
Mm.
Even when I was making parole, I was still, because they denied me the first time, but they gave it to me the second time. And I still was like, okay, I still got 30 years to do. So,
Did you cry after you got found guilty?
Nope, didn't cry. Nope.
So you two were in prison together, right?
Yes. I actually met him in the county 1995. That's when I met him, and we were across the hall. And just thinking about this whole little thing, I'm getting a little emotional, but I met him in 1995.
So they take you to prison. What was that like? Like, what was it like to be in prison?
Oh my goodness. I started at Granite in February of 96. I started at Granite. Oh my goodness. It was, I didn't know if I was going to make it away from that place. I mean, as soon as I got off the bus, I seen the police wrestling with a guy and knives falling out his jacket. I was like, oh my goodness, I'm in prison. It hit me. I was like, oh.
Granite was known as Gladiator School, and I was there too, and it was terrible.
So you're talking to us now. So how did you make it through? Was there like something that you focused on, or what did you do to keep yourself strong while you were there?
Pray.
What was the other stress relievers for you?
Weights, basketball.
You're a pretty good basketball player.
Yeah, I was. I can't no more.
Why no more?
I'm 45, Marco.
That's not old.
I paid enough. I paid my knees. I paid enough on concrete.
Oh. Mm.
Yeah, I can't tell you. I got two kids I got to chase around. I don't need to play no basketball.
That's good exercise, huh?
Yes, it is.
Can I go back to the hands? You know, you said she identified your hands.
Yeah.
Have you ever thought about being a hand model?
No, I haven't, Marco.
You might want to consider that. You must have very nice hands.
Must be. I never thought of that.
Yeah, you need to go into hand modeling. That's an actual job. George Costanza, he was a hand model on Seinfeld.
Oh, yeah. I knew it was an actual job.
Were you offered any kind of like educational opportunities when you were in prison?
Yeah, that's what I did. I didn't want to be a slave in prison. So I went to, went to classes. I just took a bunch of classes, everything that they had. And it got me through almost completely through the second, my second 30. So I just took classes. I didn't want to work. I told them that I wasn't going to work for them. I'm going to go to school.
Can you tell me what led to you getting out of prison? Like, how did it start?
I made parole.
You made parole?
Yes. I did my time.
Wow. So how many years did you do total?
16.
16?
Yes.
And so I read about you on the Innocence Project website.
Mm-hmm.
How did you get involved with them?
Oklahoma Indigent Defense System sent me to the Innocence Project in New York. They said they were just, the Oklahoma thing was just starting with the Innocence, and they wouldn't, like they are today. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. So they sent me to the Innocence Project in New York. Very sick.
And can I tell you, like, I really admire that because you were out. I mean, you were on parole, which sucks, but you were out, but you still wanted to prove that you didn't do this. And I think that that's really admirable.
Well, the guy that was for the Innocence Project that was actually working on my case was moving to start his own law firm. I wish I could remember his name. But one of his students, I wish I could remember his name, one of his students said, let me take a look at my case one more time. And he found my evidence in Texas somewhere. They had sent it to Texas, and they had told me it was destroyed. They had told me that for 10 years that my evidence had been destroyed. So I was out on parole. I was out.
So they find you, like the DNA and.
Yeah.
In Texas?
I was out on parole. My parole officer called me at work. I was on a leg monitor for 6 months. I had a job. I had to pay for the leg monitor. My parole officer called me and said, there's some people from New York, Innocence Project, that want to talk to you. Can I give them your number? I said, yeah. And the guy called me and said, I found your evidence in Texas. And did you still want to pursue your innocence? I said, yes, sir. Yes, I do.
And so what happened next?
I took DNA tests. Well, I gave her, I took a couple of DNA tests to match it, to go against this red hair. And when it came back not mine again, they were on it. They were ready. It's like, well, we got you. Let's go.
And so was it like a court proceeding? How did you get officially exonerated? How did that process work?
They filed some paperwork. I went back to court and they had to say I was actually innocent.
I have the SeatGeek app on my phone. And as someone who spent the technology years in prison, it's by far the easiest way I've found to shop for tickets. I can buy tickets anywhere. And with just a few taps, I can instantly find seats. I actually just used SeatGeek to buy some Thunder tickets.
SeatGeek is designed to make your ticket purchasing as efficient as possible.
SeatGeek saves you time and money by searching a lot of websites to compare prices so you get the best ticket for your money.
Plus, every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop for tickets on SeatGeek without stress.
Make SeatGeek your go-to app for finding the best deals on every type of ticket, from sports and concerts to comedy and theater.
Best of all, our listeners get $20 off their first SeatGeek purchase. Just download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code ACTUAL today. That's promo code ACTUAL for $20 off your first SeatGeek purchase.
What year did you make parole and when you were released?
I paroled in 2011. And I got out June 2011.
And what year did that guy call you saying that your lawyer called you saying that they wanted to ask you, did you want to pursue your innocence?
It was probably still 2011, but we didn't really get on it till 2012. They fought for a little bit, but in the end, they said that I was innocent.
So you have this actual innocence hearing, and how did you feel when, I mean, you knew all along you were innocent, but now you're legally and officially declared innocent. How did that feel?
I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe it. It came true. God proved, the truth came to light. I did time, but the truth came to light that I was innocent. So it was just kind of overwhelming to go through a struggle like that. And then, because I was on parole, I was out, I was working, This guy was his last thought. He was going to do something else. I was just going to live my life, rest of my life on parole, I guess. Work the minimal money jobs that I could work.
So how are you doing now? How's your life like now?
I'm good.
You're good.
I don't do nothing. I got a 4-year-old and a 7-year-old.
Oh, you're busy.
I got a 4-year-old. Yeah. See, my hands, I got it. That's my job right there.
Did you receive any compensation, if you could talk about it, from anyone?
Yeah. Oklahoma only gave me $175,000. That was their cap after the last guy they had to pay. They paid $14 million to Arvin McGee. They paid $14 million. So that was from Oklahoma. But after that, they put a cap on it. At 175, they said, we don't care if you spend the night or you do 20 years. We're only giving you $175,000 if you're wrong and you're right. So we had to go civil, and I was awarded $8 million. We did, I'll settle for $500,000 for half the time I did. I did 16 years. I got $8 million. Instead of $1 million a year, I got $500,000. I think that's how it worked out.
Is that like a lump sum, or do they pay it out to you in payments? How does that work?
Oh, that's a lump sum check.
So DeMarco and I were talking a little bit before we called you, and he said that part of the reason that you got that settlement was that you could prove that there was some kind of misconduct. Is that how it worked?
Yes. Yes. We had a guy from Texas. He had been... He worked for the FBI for 20 years doing forensics on hair. And that's what we used. And he said just from his first look at it, he didn't even think it was a human hair.
So back when the original trial was happening, they should have known that, like, inconclusive was a lie is basically what he was saying.
Yeah. Yeah. And I shouldn't have been convicted. They didn't prove beyond reasonable doubt. I still don't understand that. It was doubt. I had alibi. I had my sister's car. I borrowed. I went, I did all this stuff. And they didn't even say it was even give me a chance. It was like, no, it sounded like you did it.
So talking to you, I asked, how are you doing? You said, I'm good. I have two kids. And how do you think that this whole experience has changed how you look at life now?
Well, now I got kids, so I'm living my life for them.
Do you think it makes you like more mistrusting, or?
That's just the world we live. This is just the world we live in. I mean, I don't trust many anyway. That's why I tried to get away as far away from Tulsa as I could. So I mean, no, I don't trust. Police stop me. Sometimes they don't harass me. They even ask, so how do you feel about police? It's like, well, some of y'all do y'all job and some of y'all don't. So, You know, that's just, it's just the world we live in.
What advice, I'm curious, what advice, if any, do you have to ask to tell anyone who might be wrongly convicted of a crime?
Stay strong. Pray. I tell them to do what I did. You know, stay out of trouble. Stay out the way. I don't know.
Yeah.
God got a plan for us all.
Because, you know, we was on several yards together, and I have some fond memories of you, and I can recall back when we both were saying we were innocent. And now here we are out here, and most recent, we hung out in San Diego together. You know, that to me, that was huge. You know, to see you and us both there, you know, that was huge.
That was big for me too, Margo. Especially not to have to see you in Tulsa, Oklahoma area.
Yeah.
To see you, you know, away from here. And that was cool. I enjoyed that.
Yeah. And I remember you used to cook a lot. Do you cook any?
And I don't want to, but you know, everybody, you know, my wife, everybody don't like to cook. So
yeah. And this guy,
you know, sometime I don't, no, nah, I try not to though. I go buy me a burger, man. I don't be trying to cook.
Didn't you want to be a chef when you got out? I recall you saying you wanted to be a chef.
Man, I might have said that. I don't remember.
I remember everybody, when it's time to spread, everybody would pitch in, and everybody wanted him to cook because he could cook. and
in the microwave.
When it was time to spread, I need to know what that means.
In the microwave.
Yeah, a spread is like a meal, and you know, just everybody pitch in whatever they could, and you know, Sid would cook it. You know, he would make it. Some ramen noodles, cheese, some barbecue beef, or whatever he put in. I don't know what the ingredients he put
in. Wow, in the microwave?
In the microwave, in a hot pot. But it was delicious. I was licking my hands.
Man, we should have done this at your house, Cedric.
Oh, I'm in.
I don't cook.
Oh, it's awful. He don't cook. Dang.
Yeah, I don't cook.
So I was in San Diego too. And I have a question. Because the people listening to this are people like me, people who've never had this experience. But I get the question from them all the time, how can I help? How can I help people who are being wrongly convicted or wrongly accused? What do you think regular people like me could do to help?
The biggest thing they can do is contribute to any innocence project. Any innocence project. That's, you know, let the people that know what they're doing do what they do. I don't think one person can.
That's what I was going to interject. Do what you can. Help the Innocence Project. Donate, whether it's a few dollars or a few hundred dollars. But I was going to interject that and say that as well.
So that's the best thing.
I think that you were on to when you said, you know, if you're on jury duty, you know, really think about a reasonable doubt. Don't judge just based on, you know, a person, the way they look or their voice or their hands, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it really is important to give people the presumption of innocence.
You know, which we don't get, because it says, I don't get, it says innocent until proven guilty, but we sit in jail, you know, a year, 2 years, you know, waiting on jury, and we should be at home with our families, you know, working. That's definitely what we do. If it's innocent till proven guilty. That was one of my first tattoos I got, was guilty till proven innocent. First tattoo, I wanted first tattoos I got. And nobody understood it.
Is there anything else that you want to say that we didn't ask about?
No, I'm not a big talker.
And I know, and he's telling the truth, he's a very quiet guy, but he's very humble. But I have a question. Are you going to the Innocence Conference next year? It's in Memphis.
Memphis?
Yes, Memphis.
I'm thinking about it. I'll probably go to that one.
Oh, yeah, I'll be there.
Maybe.
I hope to see you there.
Yeah. I'll keep in contact with you, let you know if I'm going or not.
All right. And even if you're not, we need to hang out.
Well, I just want to say thank you for talking to us. I really appreciate it.
No problem. You're welcome.
Until next time, thank you so much for listening.
Actual Innocence is hosted by DeMarco Carpenter and Brooke Giddings. Rough editing is done by Brooke, and master production is done by John Kerr. And our original music was made by Blake Maple. Until next time, listen, learn, and advocate for justice. Well, I want to talk to you about Pro Flowers. I have a wonderful story about Pro Flowers. The first time I ever used Pro Flowers, I surprised my wife when she got off from work. And all I can say is, I got lucky.
You can't say that.
Oh, okay.
But that was amazing.
Oh, okay.